Rabbi Moshe Feldman.
Good morning, Rabbi Yisai. I'd like Perishus to dedicate today's shiur to our dear friend Bernard Morris. He used to be a beloved member of the shiur of Torah Way. Always encouraged me to give a shiur, and we miss him. And as I say, I'd like to dedicate the shiur to him, to his neshama. Start off with a story. Reb Getzel felt it was time to begin to prepare for his final journey in life. So he had his carriage prepared, and he set out to visit in turn each of his three sons. And he came to his first son, he arrived, and his grandchildren came to greet him and hugged him. And he said, "Yes, very nice, but I've come for serious business. Where's Daddy?" So the son appeared, and Rav Getzel said to the eldest son, "Son, I feel it's time very, very soon for my neshama to leave the world. I want to ask you, what do you plan to do after my levaya? What do you plan to do in my name? What do you plan to do for my neshama?" So the son said, he was shocked, "Dad, please don't speak like that." He said, "No, I feel it's time to talk serious matters." So the son said, "Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a shul. I've got the means. And I'm going to bear the shul in your name. I'm going to donate a Sefer Torah on the Yot site in your memory. And I'm going to fund the largest healing group in the land. And I'm going to call it Zichro in Getzel. I'm going to do big things for your neshama." So the father said, "Fine, thank you very much indeed. I'm very happy. I feel at ease." And he'll even have Tamidei Chachamim to daven for his neshama. Excellent. He left his first son, and he set on his way to go to his second son. And he came to the second son, and he said, "My dear son, after all the preliminaries, what are you going to do after my levaya?" The son said, "Dad, please don't speak like that. But now that I see you're serious, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open a school. I'm going to open a big primary school. I'm going to open a yeshiva. I'm going to call it Zichro in Getzel. And all the Torah studied will be in your zechus. And I'm going to have big soccer funds, and it's going to be Kupas Getzel." Fine, lovely. And he set off to go, and he came to his third son. The third son was known to be a sharp, sharp cop, razor sharp mind. And he arrived at his son's house, and he told him exactly the same as what he said to the first two sons. And the third son said, "Dad, please don't speak like that." And he said, "No, I'm serious. Okay." So he said, "Dad, I'd like to go on a short journey with you outside the city. I'm going to take some candles and some matches, because where we're going can get very, very dark. It's also, we can knock ourselves against rocks, so we could lose some of the candles. So I'm taking quite a few candles, and I'm taking quite a few boxes of matches." Okay. So they set out in the carriage, and they went outside the city, and then they came into a forest. They went through the forest until the carriage stopped. And the son said, "Here we alight. Here we get off. And we're going to continue walking through the forest." So they walked together through the forest. And then they came to the entrance of a cave. And they set into the cave together, father and son, and it began to get dark, and the son took out a candle, and he lit some matches. I forgot to mention that the son had said to the father, please take some of your own candles and matches, because we may lose all our candles and lose the matches. Please take some of your own. And the father said, he's being overcautious. He's got plenty of candles, plenty of matches. I'll be all right. It means going back home and fetching some candles. It'll be all right. And they continued through the caves, and the sun began to light one candle after another, and he began to lose the candles and lose the matches until they came to the darkest point of the caves. Pitch black, the sun lit the final candle with a final match. They went on for a short distance. The candle was lost, the light went out, and they were left in pitch darkness. And the son and the father said to the son, son, light another candle. He said, father, I haven't got any more candles of my own. Please, can I have some of your candles that you brought? And the father said, but son, I was relying on you. I haven't got any candles of my own. I was relying on you. He said, I told you, we need to bring more candles, my honored father, because we're losing candles and losing matches. If you haven't brought your own, I'm afraid we're going to have to struggle in this deep darkness. And the nimshal is pretty obvious. A person cannot rely on anybody else. It's all very nice to build shuls in his name and yeshivas in his name and tehillim groups and tzedakah funds. All that's wonderful and marvelous. But what a person needs to do for his own neshama is his own work. His own elevation of his neshama, he cannot rely not even on his own children. At the beginning of Mesillas Yesharim, the very, very first paragraph in Perek Aleph, the Mesillas Yesharim says an amazing thing. He says a person, tachlis ha'adam, the purpose of man, of mankind. Now, if you stop there, you might think he would say to serve Hashem, to keep the Torah, to do mitzvahs. The Mesillas Yesharim uses an amazing lashon. And he starts off by saying a person was created lehis'aneg al Hashem, for him to take pleasure from Hashem. It doesn't say to give pleasure to Hashem. A person himself should take pleasure from Hashem, and to velehonois miziv shchinosay, and for a person to benefit from the shine of the Eibushter Shekhinah, from the splendor of Hashem Shekhinah. This is how the Mesillas Yesharim begins his Heilige Sefer. And you might say, what does it mean taking pleasure from Hashem? How can I take pleasure from Hashem? How can I benefit from Hashem's shine of Hashem Shekhinah? What can I possibly do to reach such a madrega? In other words, what we're asking today is, how can I strike my match to light the candle? How am I able to see through the darkness of this world, through the dark caves, to be able to see where I'm going, and to be able to come out whole on the other side? How am I able to do it? And at the same time, getting pleasure from Hashem, having benefit from Hashem's shine, from Hashem's glory. How is a person able to do it? The story is told of a person who arrives in town. He arrives in a town, and he decides, as he passes through to go to the entrance of the town, he stops by at the town's Beis HaKvaros. And he looks at the tombstones in the Beis HaKvaros, and he notices a terrible thing. Most of the people of this small town died relatively young. Some died at 40, maximum 50. No one was older than 50. Some were even 20, and some were even in their teens, and some were children. And he couldn't understand how it was possible to have nobody in the town living to a ripe old age. And he felt a bit upset and he felt a bit afraid. And he decided maybe he won't go to this town. But night had fallen. And he decided, well, if I'm here already, let me see Ma Tivoy Shel Ir Zeh. What's the nature of this town? So he goes into the town and he arrives in the Beis HaMidrash, the central Beis HaMidrash of the town. The Beis HaMidrash is full of people learning. Young and old. Oh, far older than 50, older than 60, older than 70, and even many older than 80. And he can't understand. On the tombstones, they're all young people. And here I can see old people sitting and learning. His curiosity got the better of him, and he went up to one of the people there in the Beis Medrash, and he said, I need to ask you a question. I'm amazed. I see here people of all ages sitting and learning, and really enjoying the learning and enjoying davening. How is it possible that in the Beis HaKfaras I see only young people? All young people, not one single older person than 50. So the person laughed with a smile and he turned round to the visitor and he said, I'll tell you a secret about our town. We have an amazing minhag. Every child who is born in our town is presented with a blank book. As the child begins to write, it's written in his book the mitzvahs he's done and the amount of time it takes for that mitzvah to be done. That increases into days and into weeks and into months and into years. We only add up the amount of time the person is learning and doing mitzvahs. When you see the number of years on the matseva on the tombstone, that's the sum total of the amount of time the person has done mitzvahs and learned Torah in this world. All the other times are not mentioned on the tombstone. So when it might say 40 years old, that person might have died at 80 or 90. But it's only including the amount of time that the person has spent learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. An amazing thing. He said, thank you very much for telling me such a wonderful, beautiful thing. Because when a person is occupied in Kedusha, when a person is occupied in learning and doing mitzvahs, he is on his way to receiving this special shine which otherwise wouldn't be available. The Mesillas Yesharim continues and writes that the real place for this pleasure, the real place for this shine, is Olam Haba. But by the fact that he says the real place is mashma, that a person can get it in this world as well. If all the pleasure seekers, people who are looking for pleasure, looking for people who are looking for a good time, people who are looking for a good night, if they would know how much true pleasure and true joy a person can get from being occupied in Kedusha, being occupied in learning of Torah and doing mitzvahs, this would be the greatest pleasure he would seek, and he would not need to seek any other pleasure. This would be the greatest pleasure. Why? Because he's beginning to receive the shine, the ziv, that the Mesillas Yesharim is talking about. V'lehonois miziv shchinosai. This is the beginning of what he's talking about. There's a famous medrash where the medrash says Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa. Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa saw many people offering the nedarim and nedavos to the Beis HaMikdash. And he wanted to give something to the Beis HaMikdash, but he was a very poor man. He was a man of small means. And he cried over it. And he said, please Hashem, give me the chance to be able to offer something special to the Beis HaMikdash. And Chazal tell us that he saw a large stone. He said, I want this stone to be a stone put in the Beis HaMikdash, whether inside or outside. I want this stone to beautify the Beis HaMikdash. And he spent time polishing, cleaning, making it really, really handsome and good looking. When the stone was ready, he had no idea how he was going to carry this stone to the base, to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash. And he found some workers. And he said, please, can you take this stone to Yerushalayim for me? They gave a price. 5 gulden. He had no means of paying this amount of money. So he gave up and said, I'm awfully sorry, I can't do it. And he left it. Later on, he saw more workers travelling by. Chazal tell us they were not ordinary people, they were malachim. He said, please, can you take this stone for me to Yerushalayim? And they said, all you need to do is put your hand on the stone. He put his hand on the stone, and before he knew it, the stone had been lifted from the ground. He was being transported together with the stone and taken to Yerushalayim, just outside the Beis HaMikdash. The question is, Rabbi Hanina ben Doisa knew that he was a man of poor means. He knew that he wasn't able to carry the stone to Yerushalayim. What was the point of cutting and polishing and cleaning if he knew that he couldn't do anything with it anyway? How was he going to carry it to Yerushalayim? If even the small amount of money wanted, he wouldn't be able to afford to take. And the answer is, Rabbi Hanina ben Doisa knew that somehow he had to do all he could. Whatever was in my power, the rest will be done with the help of Hashem. And one of the greatest proofs we have is from this week's Sedra. Basya bas Paray. She saw the basket in the water. She knew she wasn't able to reach the basket. She had no idea how she was going to take it. Fatishlach es amosa. She knew she had to stretch out, she had to do something. She sent her handmaid, and she was able to take hold of the basket. Immediately, straight afterwards, Fatiftach vatirehu, says Rashi. Why does it say Vatirehu and she saw him? If anyway it says Es Hayelet, it should just say the female version. Vatera Es Hayelet. Is it Vatera? She saw the child. Why would it have to be Vatirehu? So Rashi says Shechino Imoy. She saw the Shekhinah, she saw the shine surrounding the baby. You might say everybody was able to see the shine around Moshe Rabbeinu, and the answer is no, not everybody. But Basya Bas Paroi, by the fact that she was able to do whatever she could, until she reached the point when she opened the basket, she was zeicha to see the shine of the Shekhinah. When we ask ourselves, how are we able, with our poshut amaisim, with our simple deeds, how are we able to see the shine of the Shekhinah? And the answer is very, very simple. Since, as the Masechet Yesharim says, a person, the taklis, is to take pleasure in Hashem, if Hashem wants you to have the pleasure, then if you do what you can, Hashem will make sure that you get that pleasure. And Hashem will make sure that you will be able to benefit from the shine of the Shekhinah of Hashem. One of the first midas, which the Orech HaTzadikim tells us, that a person needs to do in order to make his mitzvahs worthy of being in the category of Lehonois Miziv Shekhinah, is Zerizus. Once a person procrastinates, once a person delays, Once a person is lethargic, is lazy about something, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it when I get the chance. As soon as you hear somebody say, I'll do it when I get the chance, you know he'll never do it. It's as simple as that. You don't even have to ask again, no, have you done it? Once a person says to you, when I get the chance, I'll do it, that's the end of the subject. It won't happen. Dovo boru umonusa. You can try it and you'll see. As soon as somebody says yes, the time will come, the time will never come. And there was a meiser of Reb Zebach Braverman. He was told, unfortunately, that one of his Talmidim was smoking on Shabbos. He was very, very upset about it. Very, very upset. And he decided he was going to confront this Talmud head on. And he came to him and he said, I don't want to upset you, and I may be totally wrong because I didn't see it myself, I've only heard, but is it true that you've been smoking on Shabbos? And the Talmud turned round to his Rebbe, Zerach Braverman, and he said, I must tell you it's true. I do smoke on Shabbos. And the Rebbe looked and said, can I help you in any way? Is there any way I can help you? Any way I can stop this situation? Or is it too far gone? And the boy said, I grew up in Rishon LeZion at the time. And there I went to a secular school and the teacher said, if you want to do something, you do it whenever you want. It's your will, it's your wish, it's your prerogative, you do it. I began smoking, and because of that teacher, when it came to Shabbos, I couldn't stop smoking. As soon as Reb Braverman heard this, he realized that there was a desperate need in the town to have a proper cheder, where there's a proper Rebbe who will be able to teach the pupils Kedusha Shabbos, be able to teach them about Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and with Zerizus, he went ahead and he called a meeting of all the women folk of his family that Motzi Shabbos. His wife, daughters, daughters-in-law, granddaughters, all together. And he told them this story, that he'd just spoken to his Talmud about smoking on Shabbos, and the teacher, Rishon LeZion. He said, I want you to do something amazing. I want you to put all your jewelry on this table. Go, fetch all your jewelry and put it on this table. We're going to sell the jewelry and we're going to open a proper cheder in Rishon LeZion. And you know what? All his family, to their great zechus, they all put jewelry on the table. And he went, and from that money, the jewelry he sold with that money, he opened the first proper cheder in Rishon LeZion, and they taught proper Torah, La'amitoi, and many, many, many Shemrei Torah mitzvahs emerged from that very first cheder which he had set up. Because it was not something, we'll have meetings and we'll have conventions and we'll decide what to do. Put your jewelry on the table, sell the jewelry, with that money we'll open a cheder. Within weeks. That's what he did. Once you see something is going to be done and something needs to be done, leis aneg al Hashem. We need to take pleasure from Hashem, because Hashem is going to give us everything we need for this project. In other words, we're going a step further. Taking pleasure from Hashem doesn't only mean taking pleasure from the mitzvahs we do. Taking pleasure from the siyata dishmaya, which Hashem will give us once we go ahead and do the mitzvah. The first Belzer Rebbe, the Sar Sholem, he was seen working alongside builders constructing the big shul in Belz, actually passing bricks, passing cement, passing shovels. And the Hasidim came past and they said, Rebbe, fine, we're having a big shul built, but why do you have to be the one who's passing bricks and passing cement and passing water and passing shovels? Surely it's not Kavaitcha. So the Belz Rebbe, the Sar Sholem, said, I'll tell you an amazing story. I'll tell you something fascinating. I was learning in a Beis HaMedrash together with two other Chaverim. The three of us were learning. All three of us had the same cholam. Maybe not once, maybe a few times. That if we learnt 1,000 nights from that time, we would be zeicher to Gilui Eliyahu. We will be zeicher to see Eliyahu Hanavi. And so we all started learning for 1,000 nights. Unfortunately, the other two dropped out. They couldn't take it. They slept, fell asleep, and they lost the chance. But I battled on and battled on and battled on. I knew it was hard. I knew that I wouldn't make it, couldn't make it, al pi teva, but I decided I was going to continue. And however hard it was, obviously must have slept sometime during the day, but only small dozing off and coming out again. On the 1,000th night, the very last night, he'd really worked for so long, a storm arose that very night. The storm was blowing and blowing, thunder and lightning and all sorts of, all the wind was howling, but he carried on learning. And he tried very hard to stay awake. Towards the end of the night, a wind came and blew out, smashed the windows of the Beis HaMedrash. It was a real frightening scene. But he carried on learning. He wouldn't get disturbed. He wouldn't get distracted. Until almost the end of that night, he was fighting and fighting to stay awake. He went up to Aron HaKodesh. He was almost asleep. He opened the Aron HaKodesh and he said, please Hashem, I beg you, please, I'm almost there. Please allow me to stay awake. He carried on davening. As he finished davening, he turned around, the storm had stopped. It was calm, it was peaceful, and he was able to learn the next few minutes. He turned round and he saw an old man in the Beis HaMedrash. And he realized that old man was Eliyahu HaNavi. He'd been zeicher to Gilui Eliyahu. Eliyahu HaNavi said, now let's learn together. And he learned with him Hilchus Binyan Beis HaKnesses. And the Sar Sholem said, when I learned about the building of a shul together with Eliyahu HaNavi that night, I was determined that when we do build a shul, I am going to be there together with the builders, and I'm going to be actually building, because I was zeicher to survive that 1,000 nights without sleep, and I was zeicher to be with Eliyahu HaNavi and to learn with him Hilchus Beis HaKnesses. In Kisisa, Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem, Hareini na es kavodecha. Please show me your glory. We do so many mitzvahs. We make so many brachas. We bent so many times. We daven so many times. Please Hashem, let me see your glory. Let me see. And the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, V'ro'iso es achoiroi, you will see my back, ufonai lo yero. You will not see my front. What does that mean? You'll see the back of Hashem. Hashem's got a back. Hashem hasn't got a back. Eloi de musagu, front or back. What it means is, when you look back at your life, you will realize that everything that's happened to you could not possibly have happened by nature if not for Hashem. everybody here, think for a moment of all the nisim v'niflaos that's happened to a person in the past year alone, never mind a whole lifetime. And it wouldn't have been possible without niflaos Hashem. In benching we say, I'll ask you a question. Once we've said, that's enough. That means, why do we need to say, we all know the famous vort that the nachash the ofar toichal kol yemei chayecha. You will eat dust all the days of your life. Ask the Sfas Emes, isn't that the greatest blessing anybody can have? Sometimes we want food, we have to go and get food. We have to go and buy, we have to go and take. Offer the nachash, wherever he goes, he has offer ready. Sfas Emes says, this is no bracha. It's like a father who says to his son, son, nadach, take whatever you need, take it and leave me alone. Never come to me again. We don't want that. We want to be able to have the need to come to Hashem and continually ask Hashem to continually feel Hashem's presence, to take pleasure from Hashem and to benefit from the shine of His glory. And that's why but we still want to come on to B'chol Yoim U'V'chol Eis U'V'chol Shor. We want to come to daven to Hashem every day and at all times and at every hour. We still want, need to come to Hashem and daven. We don't just want Mefarnes. Rabbi Akiva went away for 12 years. When he came back, he was almost at the entrance of his home, almost there, and he heard his famous, his dear wife, Rachel, say to a neighbor, I wouldn't mind if he spent another 12 years learning. After the neighbor said, you're like a living widow, your husband being away for so many years. I wouldn't mind if he goes for another 12 years. Immediately at that stage, he turned round and he went away. He went back to learn. Till then, he'd acquired 12,000 Talmidim. He went and he acquired another 12,000, 24,000 Talmidim altogether. And the question is, if he was there, why didn't he go in? Why didn't he go in and say hello, sit down, have a cup of tea, and then go and continue on his journey and go back to Shiva? Why did he turn back without even going in? And the answer, which we heard recently, is there was Rachel. She'd made the biggest gamble anybody could have made. Her father had won Kalba Savua, had wanted her to marry any one of the great Talmidei Chachamim of the time who would come to his house. She refused them all. She wanted to marry Shepherd Akiva. 40 years old, didn't even know the Aleph Beis. But she saw in this Akiva what we've been saying all morning, that he can take pleasure from Hashem and he can benefit from Hashem's shine and splendor. He will become a Godel B'Yisrael. How she knew that? She just felt it. There was no sign. He didn't even know Aleph Beis. She took the gamble and she said, I want to marry him. What caused his greatness over the first 12 years? And the answer is the davening that she poured her heart out over those 12 years and davened and davened and davened. Please Hashem, please look after my husband Akiva, please make him great. And indeed, 12,000 Talmidim 12 years later. Had he gone inside and his wife would have seen how great he'd become, And she would have seen how many Talmidim he'd acquired. Her davening might not have been so intense anymore. Baruch Hashem Gelungen, I'm okay now. I've achieved. I'll daven a bit more, he becomes even greater, but it might not be with the same power, with the same petrol, with the same burn, with the same striking of the match that's been till now. And so he didn't go in. Turn round and let her continue davening, because he has not reached the pinnacle of his greatness. It was only once he'd acquired another 12,000 Talmidim, and he came back after 24 years, he realized that all her tefillas, she had been the one who'd been instrumental in his growth. His growth had been through her eagerness and her joy in being able to look after such a great husband, through her tefillas, and be able to make sure that he becomes as great as he became. She realized that this is going to be the great Rabbi Akiva, and indeed, she was proven to be completely vindicated, and this was how he became. How do we reach that great shine? How do we reach that great pleasure? How do we reach the stage when a person can say every mitzvah that he does gives me such pleasure? It's something that we've inherited from our Avos HaKadoshim. As we know the terrible, terrible story of Hannah and her seven sons, the famous Hanukkah story. And when it came to the death of her seventh son, and the wicked Antiochus said, you know what? I'm not even going to ask him to bow down to the idol. I'm just going to put a ring on the ground. And all she needs to do is pick up the ring. It looked as if he's bowing down. And the boy said, no, I'm not even doing that. I'm not even doing something that will look as if I'm serving idols. Kill me if you want. And as this young boy was being led to be killed, Antiochus turned round to Hannah and said, just before I kill this seventh one, what is the secret of your strength? How can you do it? How could you lose one son after another? How can you do it? And she said, very simple. Because we've inherited this, it is our inheritance. It's put inside our bones and body, Mesiras Nefesh. From Avraham Avinu and the Akedah, this has been implanted in us. When you see a Yid do mitzvahs with Mesiras Nefesh, you know it's been given to us by our Avos HaKadoshim. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Once a family appreciates that, feels it, is excited with it, lives with it, then the house becomes a house of pleasure. The house becomes a house of shine. Because whatever you do, you know, not only am I serving Hashem, but I'm taking pleasure from serving Hashem. And I'm taking pleasure from the Siyata Dishmaya that Hashem is giving me, Yismach Leiv Mevakshei Hashem, because Dirshu Hashem V'uzoi Bakshu Fanav Tomit. But just finish off with one final story, if I may. In pre-war Russia, the late 1930s, Nabuch, most terrible, terrible time of our history. The worst time of our history. And in Russia, in USSR, the people were not only being killed, but those who were alive were forbidden to keep Torah and mitzvahs, forbidden to daven, forbidden to do any kind of avodas Hashem whatsoever. And there was a rav of a small underground shul where people came to the shul, people came at various times, and one Yom Kippur, the people had been at work all day because they'd been so taken away from Avodas Hashem. They'd been so engulfed in the regime of the USSR, the communist regime. They had spent all day at work. And they were trickling into shul for Ne'ilah. Trickling into shul. And they were coming into shul And the Rav, who'd been in shul all day with a minion, and he saw the people, and he was about to speak to them before Neila. And he thought to himself, Gewalt, what can I say to people before Neila who'd been in work all day? And they've just come now before Neila. What can I say to these people? How can I address them? And he said, Rabbi Isai, you've come to shul. You've come to shul now. B'mesiras nefesh. We all know the trouble we might get if we're seen in shul. Many of you, most of you have been in work all day, and I'm not blaming you, I'm not laying any kind of guilt whatsoever. Now you've come to shul. Let me tell you a moshel. In the old shtetl, in the ghetto, there was an argument over a hen. Two people were quarreling to whom the hen belongs. One said, hen or shali? And the other one said, hen or shali? And they were quarreling and quarreling. And the Rav said, wait, alright, I've heard all the arguments. You know what? We'll let the hen decide. He had a plot over here. This man had a plot of land over here. What we'll do is we'll tie the hen together, we'll bind its feet, and then, so it can't fly and it can't walk away, and then gradually we'll undo the ropes, we'll undo the knots, and we'll see which way the hen runs. And whichever way the hen runs, that is home, that's my home. And so they tied the hen, and then they undid the knots and they undid the ropes, and the hen began to run to one of the plots of land. And the Rav said, oh, this is the owner of the hen. The hen knew which plot of land to run to. It's run to him. He's the owner. And the Rav of that shul turned round to the people and said, you've been at work all day. You've been away from Avodas Yom HaKippurim. You've been away from Avodas Hashem. But you don't belong there. Horiah, when you've been untied, when you've been unbound, where have you come? You've come to shul. You've come to the shul. So it shows that this is where you really belong. You belong here. You've come here in these terrible times. Baruch Hashem, Malchus Shel Chesed, we don't live in terrible times. Contrary to what we keep on hearing, we don't live in terrible times. We live in times where we're able to keep Torah and mitzvahs. We're able to have bat midrashim like this. And this is where we go. This is where we turn to. When Baruch Hashem, we're unbound and untied. We come because this aneig al Hashem, because we want to be able to have pleasure from the glory of Hashem, and we want to get ready, as the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Ha'olam hazeh doimel leproisdei." This world, even though we do get some pleasure from Hashem and we do get benefit from it, the shine of His Shekhinah, this world is a corridor to Olam Haba. Haskein atzmecho beproisdei. Prepare yourselves in the corridor to be able to reach the greatest delight of all, which of course is Olam Haba. Once a person is able to accumulate, and a person is able to gather whatever he can, the best way is by simonim. When a person is thirsty, when a person wants a drink of water, and he's about to make the bracha for water, just think, Samolach on nafshi. My soul thirsts for you. Connect my own thirst to thirst for Hashem. Whatever a person does connects to Hashem. And this way Hashem will give us limitless joy, abundance, yismach lev, avakshe Hashem, oezaru al atzadik, ul yishrei lev, simcha.